If you've walked down the dairy aisle at the grocery store lately, you've likely been overwhelmed by all of the options we now have. Sure, there's still your standard whole 2%, 1% and skim, but now we've also got things like ultra-filtered milk, A2, lactose-free, low-temperature pasteurized milk, or organic options. And this is all before we get to alternative milks like oat and almond, which have standard versus barista-style additions. And simply put, I have so many questions. Well, friends, as you can see, I bought a lot of milk, and we're going to get to the bottom of this by breaking this video down into three parts. Part one, what is milk? We'll define milk in simple terms, water, carbs, fat, and protein, and show how all of these milk types are essentially remixing these components in different ways. And based on what we learned, I chose four different whole milk options for a taste test.
Ooh, much thinner than number one. I picked up that right away.
Part two is the rise of alternative milks. We'll show how plant-based milks solve problems that traditional dairy can't by kind of re-engineering the sensory experience of milk with different ingredients. And I'm going to do that side-by-side iced latte test of almond versus oat versus whole milk. And lastly, in part three, how to choose the right milk for you. And part three is really important because, as we'll learn, milk is a pretty unique ingredient where there's a pretty good chance the milk you end up buying at the store is not the one that tastes the best, or you may want to purchase different milks for certain situations, such as using one milk for your smoothies and a different one for your coffee. And speaking of, later in the video, the iced latte coffee test is brought to you by this video sponsor, Cometeer, which made the testing process easy and perfectly controlled. And the reason why Cometeer tastes so great is that it's the first coffee that is flash frozen and stored at peak freshness. The quality of Cometeer is better than my favorite pour overs at home or espresso drinks I order from a coffee shop, and here's how it works. Cometeer sources beans from all of the best roasters around the world, then do the grinding of the beans and carefully brew them at 10 times the strength before portioning the coffee and flash freezing them into capsules. And you can already start to smell the richness and complexity of the aroma as soon as you open these. To make a hot coffee, all you have to do is add hot water to the cup, or for iced coffee and espresso-style drinks, just thaw it ahead of time and pour it in. No machines required. I did a little coffee tasting of all the different ones with some of my family, which was a lot of fun. The watermelon candy was one of our favorites, the Stellar Series Geisha was insane, and later in this video, we're going to use the Eclipse from Onyx for iced coffee with those different milks. So if you want to try Cometeer for yourself or make a really good Mother's or Father's Day gift coming up, head to the link in the description or scan the QR code on screen for 15 cups free on your first order. But now let's break down the five components of milk. On a percentage basis, the milk that comes straight from the cow is typically around 87% water, 5% carbohydrates, primarily in the form of lactose, which is a sugar, 3.5 to 4% fat, 3.5% protein, and then around 0.5% vitamins and minerals and other little bitty things. And this is important to understand because every milk option out there is essentially remixing these five components in some way. Some differences might be really obvious and others not so much. So to get your wheels turning a bit, I want to quickly compare and contrast two examples, skim milk and A2 milk. Skim or fat-free milk legally needs to be less than 0.5% fat, and it's removed through the standardization process. However, the sugar and protein content remains the same, meaning on a 100% basis, our water content increases from 87% to around 90.5%. So if you've ever tasted skim milk and gone, "Oh, it feels more watery to me," it's because it's literally made of more water. Now, when it comes to flavor, the fat is gone, which provides a lot of texture, and skim and whole milk are fundamentally different. So if you were trying to follow a recipe that calls for whole milk and you only have skim, you'd want to add some butter or oil to make up for the difference. Now, an example of a less obvious difference is A2 milk, which I didn't even realize existed before starting this video. Compositionally, A2 milk is going to be the same from a water, carbohydrate, fat, and vitamin or mineral perspective, but the key difference is in the protein. And it doesn't have more protein, but a different kind of protein. A2 milk specifically refers to milk that comes from cows, either bred or selected to produce only the A2 type of beta casein. But the primary reason why the term A2 protein is marketed has nothing to do with the taste. The total protein in milk is made up of around 80% casein and 20% whey. And a lot of the casein content comes from that A1 and A2 beta casein proteins, but how much depends on the breed of the cow. And here's a table from Deep Research summarizing some breed differences. Holstein cows are around 50-50, while other cows are almost entirely A2 protein. And the reason why A2 protein is starting to become labeled on the milk is that there are some studies that have shown that A1 beta casein can be difficult for some people to digest, while milk with only A2 beta casein may be better tolerated by certain individuals. Now, a quick caveat, this has nothing to do with lactose intolerance because lactose is the sugar in milk, not the protein. But if you are someone who is not lactose intolerant, but still has some digestive discomfort when you drink or cook with milk and other dairy products, A2 milk may be worth giving a try. And hopefully these two examples are beginning to show you how the milk you end up buying at the store can be a nuanced conversation. I've personally never had any problems with consuming dairy, so I can't weigh in on A2 milk's potential digestive benefits, but where I can lend some thoughts are in the differences of flavor between these various milks based on those five components. And this is why I wanted to set up two different taste tests for this video, or milk flights, if you will.
Now, before we get to tasting these, we need to do a quick overview on how milk is processed. This way, you'll understand why I chose these four particular milks to do a test with and how the processing could affect the flavor, such as taste, aroma, and texture.
The first step of the milk process is choosing the cow. Like we just talked about, the choice of the cow can make a difference when it comes to the resulting raw milk that comes out. Most commercial dairy cows in the US are Holstein breeds due to their milk production efficiency, and if you want a crazy stat from the USDA, the average milk production per cow averaged a bit over 24,000 pounds in 2024. However, it gets a little crazier than that. According to this article at HolsteinUSA.com, top producing Holstein cows milk three times a day have been known to produce over 72,000 pounds of milk in 365 days. Now, while most milk for drinking comes from the Holstein breed, sometimes other breeds like Jersey or Guernsey cows may be preferred for other dairy products like cheese, cream, and butter. For example, as we learned in the butter deep dive, grass-fed cows may produce milk with more beta carotene, leading to milk with a slightly yellow tinge instead of pure white. And choosing the cow is how we end up with the variable of the A2 milk we're gonna use in our taste test. And this variable has nothing to do with the processing of the milk, but everything to do with the genetics of the specific cow breed. However, that changes with our other three milks I'm gonna try. So after the cows are grown and ready to produce milk, we're ready for step two, milk collection. Cows are typically milked mechanically, and the milk is quickly cooled to prevent spoilage. And like we touched on, this raw milk will vary a bit from bit, but generally will contain around 87% water, 5% lactose, 3-4% fat, 3.5% protein, and then vitamins and minerals. And depending on where you live in the United States and around the world, you can purchase unpasteurized raw milk for consumption, and it has been growing in popularity. Now, this is not a raw milk video. We're not going to break down the arguments for or against it. There are plenty of other articles and videos out there I will link below if you're interested. From a practicality standpoint, raw milk does leave you with a much higher risk for getting sick due to the pathogens. And from a lifestyle perspective, raw milk also has the shortest shelf life as the enzymes and live bacteria left in the milk cause it to ferment and sour much faster than milks that have been pasteurized. And as we're going to find out in step three, depending on how milk is pasteurized, this can lead it to have an expiration date ranging from just a bit over a week to up to a few months. Once the raw milk leaves the farm, it heads to processing where the goal is to remove the bacteria and also make it consistent from jug to jug. And this transformation happens through three key processes. 1, fat standardization, 2, pasteurization, and 3, homogenization. So first up, we have standardization. This is where the raw milk is separated into cream and skim milk, and then is blended back to a specific amount of cream. And this is how we create whole milk, which typically has 3.25% fat, 2% with 2% fat, and it's the same on down to 1%, and then skim milk has to have less than 0.5. And all of these whole milks I'm about to test have that same amount of fat in them at 8 grams per 250 milliliters. After standardization, this is where the milk is pasteurized, and we begin to see some differences in our whole milks. Pasteurization kills bacteria by heating the milk to a certain temperature and holding it there for a set amount of time. And all three of these milks were pasteurized at different temperatures and times. First up is HTST, or high temperature, short time pasteurization. This is the most common one used for milk in the grocery store and is done by raising the milk's temperature to 161 degrees Fahrenheit for just 15 seconds before being rapidly cooled back down to 39 degrees Fahrenheit. Next is UHT, or ultra-high temperature pasteurization. This is done by raising the milk's temperature to 280 degrees Fahrenheit, but for just 2 seconds. And if you have a milk that has a really long expiration date, like several months, it was likely UHT pasteurized. Fairlife, for example, says they use UHT on their milk on the website. Now, on the opposite side of the spectrum, we have low temperature, long time pasteurization. And this is done by raising the temperature of milk to 145 degrees Fahrenheit for 30 minutes. And typically, if a producer uses LTLT, they're going to list it on the label because it takes longer and is less efficient, so the resulting milk will cost more. And I was able to find some locally produced milk using this method. Now, through pasteurization, even though it's generally a short time, we are essentially cooking the milk a bit, which could impact the flavor. How much kind of depends on, and we're going to get into shortly, but the last step after pasteurization is homogenization. Three of these milks I'm going to taste have been homogenized, and one has not, and here's how it works. So the milk fat naturally will separate from the water content over time. So in order to prevent this, homogenization is done by pushing the milk through very high pressure valves to break up the fat globules into ultra tiny ones so they won't separate. Now, after these three core steps, there are some optional advanced processing that can happen during these processes as well. First is fortification, second, ultrafiltration, and third is lactose removal, or really it should be called lactose breakdown. Fortification is when nutrients are added to milk to either replace what processing has removed or just to boost the overall nutrition profile. For example, vitamin A, D, and E are very common ones that you'll see on milk labels. Ultrafiltered milk, on the other hand, is when the milk is pushed through a soft membrane filter that separates molecules by size. And in most cases, this process is used to remove some of the water content, the lactose, and certain minerals, which in turn concentrates the protein and calcium in milk. And this is how Fairlife is able to get higher protein, lower sugar milk. Then lastly, in order to make lactose-free milk, it's not done by purely removing the lactose, but instead by breaking it down with lactase. Lactose is a milk sugar made up of glucose and galactose, and people who are lactose intolerant don't produce enough lactase, which is an enzyme that breaks lactose down into those simpler sugars that our small intestine can absorb. So to make lactose-free milk, lactase is added, typically before pasteurization. And some people say that this makes the milk taste sweeter because glucose and galactose are sweeter on their own than pure lactose is. But in short, these processes explain how we end up with so many different milk choices at the store when we're wandering the dairy aisle. Fat standardization is how we get macronutrient differences such as skim, 1, 2% in whole milk. There are micronutrient differences such as A2 protein or lactose-free milk. We have expiration dates ranging from 1 to 2 weeks or over a couple of months, and price differences from $3 to $7 or $8 or $10. And there's most likely going to be some flavor difference too, so let's see how different these milks actually taste.
Okay, so I've got all the milks here. I've got the labels underneath on the bottom, and then I'm actually going to spin these and randomize them a little bit just because I don't want to know which one is which. I kind of want to be surprised if there are any differences here. So let's give them a quick little spin. Number one, two, three, four. Reposition. We are ready to go. You guys will know on screen, but I will not know, which will be fun for me. I love going into taste tests just completely blind like this. Boy, I should get some water. All right, green one. Oh my gosh. Also, I've not just had a plain glass of whole milk in a while. I forgot how luscious and rich it is. It's crazy. But number one, very, very good whole milk. Ooh, much thinner than number one. I picked up that right away. I'm gonna go back. Yeah, this one's way more creamy and like the texture kind of sits on my tongue a bit. This one feels a little bit waterier to me. The flavor is also a little bit different. I don't know quite how to describe it. It could be like maybe a little bit more, I don't know, like cooked. I wonder if that's one of the higher temperature ones. We'll see. All right, number three. These two are much closer in texture to each other than this one. This one may be slightly thicker. The flavor itself, much more balanced. Let's go to the last one. Very interesting, and there are some clear differences here between them. Texture-wise, I would say the green one to me sticks out as like the most creamy, the most luxurious, kind of sits on your tongue really nicely, and it feels very decadent and nice to drink. Then coming down, I would say orange is probably the closest to green, but it definitely feels like it's almost like a step below. And then to me, I think the purple one here feels the most watery. As far as kind of like taste and aroma go, I think green, I feel like I really get like that buttery, dairy, creaminess kind of taste and aroma to it. It also feels a little bit, maybe a little bit more sweet. I don't know. And then, so I would say like green and orange are a little bit closer to each other as far as taste and aroma. Purple to me has kind of a, yeah, purple to me kind of has like that like kind of more cooked like milk. Like if you were making like a roux and you poured in milk or a cheese sauce, like that's kind of what this reminds me of. It's not bad, but it's just like there is kind of this clear difference in flavor. And then blue is also pretty mild. So all of them are good, but for the coffee test that I'm gonna do later in this video, I'm gonna move forward with this green one. To me, it is the most luxurious of them. So let's see what we have. Ooh. Okay, so I'm gonna keep these in line. So what is green? So that's the ultra pasteurized. Definitely just feels, it feels very like thick and luxurious. Number two is the low temp. Oh, interesting. Store and A2. So my big observation here is that yes, you can definitely pick up on differences in the taste, aroma, and texture of these various milks. That being said, I do want to point out a couple of caveats. You know, if I was using these in a baking recipe or maybe a cheese sauce, all of them are probably gonna work just fine and you're not really gonna notice much difference, because if you're making a cheese sauce, the cheese is really what gives you that kind of taste and aroma. Or if you're using it in like a cake, you're adding cocoa powder, sugar, and tons of other ingredients. So these would all work in like a cake recipe. Where you might run into some issues if you try to substitute whole milk for like a fat-free milk, because you're fundamentally adding less fat. Now, additionally, I'm not someone who can just like throw back a big old glass of whole milk with dinner or something. I forgot just how rich and decadent this really is. But one area where I do like to use whole milk is in my coffee. And what we're gonna do in the second part of this video is talk about the rise of alternative milks and kind of explain how they try to recreate these same five core components that we have in whole milk, except using different ingredients. At their core, alternative milks are trying to solve a few different problems than traditional dairy milk. For example, some people are lactose intolerant, some avoid animal products entirely for ethical or other environmental reasons, some may prefer the flavor or texture of plant-based options, and others of us might just be curious what these taste like. And this is exactly why I wanted to do a little coffee test, because the area where I've found these are most common are at cafes and coffee shops. I even did a quick poll on my Instagram, and of the 2,209 of you that voted, 34% typically order oat milk with their espresso drinks. Also, if there are any cafe owners or workers watching, I'd be curious to know how many people typically order some type of alternative milk and what those numbers look like maybe 5, 10, or 15 years back.
Now, before I get to tasting, we need to do a quick crash course on how these milks are made. And now that we understand how we end up with so many different options of cow's milk, it makes it really easy to understand what's going on with alternative milk because we're essentially remixing those same five components from earlier, but just sourcing them from different ingredients. First, we need water. This is the base of all milks, regular or alternative. And alternative milks are made by blending the core ingredient, in this case, oats and almonds, with water. Second, we need fat. Fat is needed for the body, richness, and creamy texture of milk. This almond milk uses the fat content naturally occurring in almonds, but the oat milk needs to add rapeseed oil, since obviously oats do not really have any fat in them. They're primarily a carbohydrate. And the barista versions of alternative milks generally have a bit more fat in them to try and get closer to the texture of whole milk, but they will also have stabilizers added like dipotassium phosphate in order to help foam and thicken for espresso-style drinks. Third, we have carbohydrates, which are used to lightly sweeten and give a rounded taste. Remember, in cow's milk, we had lactose, but in oat milk, the sugars are created when the oats are broken down and liquefied, or in this case, the almond milk has a little bit of cane sugar added to it. Fourth, we need protein. This is used for structure, mouthfeel, and a bit of savoriness. The alternative milks generally have a much lower amount of protein in them, as both the almond and oat milk have just 3 grams per 240 milliliters, compared to 8 grams in whole milk. Additionally, glutamic acid is one of the key amino acids that make up the casein and whey protein content in cow's milk, which triggers our umami taste, so it'll be interesting to see if that comes through differently with oat and almond milk. And lastly, we have vitamins, minerals, and miscellaneous. Like mentioned, dipotassium phosphate is commonly used to stabilize the emulsion of the fat in water in barista-style milks, and salt will commonly be added on the ingredient label for a bit of salty taste. Then oat milk can still be high in calcium, but almond milk is just lower. It kind of just depends. And here's what the nutrition labels look like for a cup of milk from the whole barista oat and almond milk variations. And basically, alternative milks are kind of like a remix. They're using plants and other ingredients to recreate the similar sensory experience of cow's milk, but each one has their own quirks and trade-offs. For example, oats obviously don't taste like almonds, but how strong is that flavor when they're mixed with water first and then used in coffee? Well, let's find out.
Okay, so we have our iced lattes ready with different milks. Let's give them a shot. I'm gonna try to mix these up just because I like to be surprised a little bit. The goal of these tests is not to like crown one as a winner. This is all personal preference at the end of the day. But I find it's more fun for me if I am pleasantly surprised and don't know which one's which. So I'm gonna blindfold up and try to fit them in our little taste testing box here. One, two, this might barely work. Okay, I think they're all in different cups. Okay, cool. I think we're good there. I think I can take that off. So let's give them a shot and see what we have. Number one. I mean, just really good. Gonna grab some water. And you can let me know down in the comments. When I'm drinking iced, I want those like darker, chocolatey or roastier kind of aromas when it comes to coffee. But if I'm drinking it hot, I much prefer kind of fruity. So these are really, really nice. Whoa, very different, those two. I think this second one was much kind of thicker to me. Yeah, let me, oh yeah. Yeah, number two, much thicker and luxurious compared to number one. Also very good. Definitely a slight difference in kind of taste and aroma, but I'm gonna still unpack that a little bit. Number three. Not a big fan of that. Yeah. Texture-wise, these two are very, very close to each other. There is some kind of like aroma that I feel like I don't think I like number three as much. It feels a little bit more bitter to me. Like it's not bad, but like I just don't think I prefer number three that much. I'm gonna go back to number one. Yeah, I mean, number one's solid, smooth. It's definitely less thick though. Like The texture is really what I'm picking up on. And I think that almond milk might be lower in fat, so that would kind of check out that it is the least viscous. All right, this is really interesting. Again, there are some very clear differences between them. I think texture for me jumps off right off the page right away. This first one is definitely thinner and it feels a little bit watery compared to 2 and 3. 2 and 3 to me feel very similar. I think 2 is kind of that more luxurious kind of texture that we're getting. As far as taste and aroma, there are definitely some differences as well. Now, all three of these I would be perfectly happy with drinking. That being said, the third one for me feels like maybe a little bit more bitter. 2 feels the most balanced to me, like a nice balance of like sweetness with kind of those darker aroma notes from this particular coffee. And then this first one, I would say it has like some kind of something else going on. I'm not sure. If I had to guess, I'm thinking like these outer two ones are probably the almond and the oat, and this middle one's the whole milk. But let's see what we got. Gotta be careful here. Okay, yeah. Almond and oat. That's interesting. But yeah, I think my clear observation is you 100%, again, can pick up on differences, like as you would expect, right? You know, oat milk and almond milk, again, they have similar of those five components, but the way they get there is differently. So that does show up when we start using them in coffee. You know, I think the oat for me, like it does have a little bit more of like a bitter and kind of, I don't know, it feels like it maybe overpowers the coffee a little bit, at least to me. And then for me, again, this is all personal preference at the end of the day. I think for me though, whole milk is kind of what I'm used to. And it, to me, again, it feels like it's in the most balance with the coffee. It feels like the milk and the coffee are working together a bit more in terms of taste and aroma. So as always, very interesting test. Would highly recommend giving this a shot if you're at home and you've kind of always wondered, what is the difference between oat and almond milk? I guarantee you'll very clearly be able to pick up on some differences between them. But anyway, this is going to bring us to part 3 of this video, where I want to pose the questions that you should be asking yourself in order to help you figure out what milk you should be buying at the grocery store. Okay, so as we've seen throughout this video, not all milks, whether dairy or plant-based, are created equal. But the real question is, how do you take all this information and actually use it when you're standing in the grocery store or when a barista asks you what type of milk you want in your latte? Well, this is why in part 3, we're going to cover the 4 human elements that everyone should consider when purchasing milk: lifestyle, health, flavor, and values. Like I mentioned in the intro, the milk you like the flavor of the most may not be the one you end up buying. For example, in my case, if I'm at a coffee shop and want a cortado, I'll go ahead and order it with whole milk. However, you typically will not find whole milk in my fridge. I typically buy 1% or skim milk, and that's because I use milk differently at home. First, if I'm drinking a plain glass of milk, I want it to be low calorie and high protein. Second, when I am at home, I tend to drink most of my coffee black, so I don't use milk much there. But if I do need it for a recipe, I can either add a bit of extra fat to it, or if I really feel like whole milk will be useful for the texture of a particular dish, I'll just go out and buy a small container of it. Additionally, since I don't drink that much milk in general, if I find one that does have a longer shelf life or expiration date, that is generally a bonus in my opinion. So here are the key questions you should ask yourself when it comes to purchasing milk. These are in no particular order, but first is lifestyle, which includes questions like, what is your primary use case for milk? How much milk do you drink, and how often do you shop for groceries? Second is health. Are you lactose intolerant or sensitive to milk? Do you prioritize high protein option, or are calories or fat content a concern? Third is flavor. Do you want a creamy, rich texture? How much does taste and aroma matter, or do you want to mix it up with something new? You could give goat milk a shot. Then fourth is values. Is environmental impact important to you? Do you prioritize organic or local products? And what's your budget you want to spend on milk? For example, I grew up with 3 brothers, so back in the day, we would go through a gallon of milk pretty quickly. And depending on the answer to these questions is how you'll figure out what milk type to buy, and I can give you some examples of what I'd recommend. For example, if you're someone who likes coffee drinks but has a sensitive stomach and price is not an issue, I would say try out an A2 protein milk or a barista-style edition of oat or almond.
If you're a big cereal eater but budget conscious and you want slightly lower calories, I'd say go ahead and buy a store brand 1 or 2% milk. If you avoid animal products entirely, alternative milks like oat, soy, or almond will be the ones for you. If you're protein focused but want really good flavor in your shakes or smoothies, I'd probably recommend unfiltered milk. Or if you're an occasional milk drinker, I would then look for ultra pasteurized milk so you can get that longer shelf life. And all of these recommendations really come from understanding those five components we talked about throughout this video so you can figure out what milk works best for you. So that will wrap it up for me in this one. Hopefully you guys enjoyed. And I would love to know, what milk do you typically buy at the grocery store? For many of you, I'm sure it's not a simple answer. You may buy whole. You may buy 1% sometimes. Some of you like skim. Some of you probably hate skim. Some of you probably only drink whole milk. But let me know down in the comments. Anyway, that'll wrap it up for me in this one. I'll catch you all in the next one. Peace, y'all.